Product Breakfast Club.
This is the Product Breakfast Club. I'm your host, Jake Knapp.
Hey, and I'm your other host, Jonathan Courtney. And we're still in New York City.
We're still in New York City, if you're lucky.
You can definitely hear this.
You can definitely hear it. Yeah, you'll definitely be able to hear it. There's just a steady hammering construction sound going on outside, which is one of the joys of New York City.
There's like no quiet place in New York. And this is like in an okay hotel room. Actually, I didn't even tell you. I'm getting this every morning from 7.
Oh, that's lucky for you. That's lucky. Well, you do have daylight, though. We have an interior room. I'm staying here with my son, Luke. We do not have all this nice daylight, but we don't have the construction sound either.
I feel like you should also take a bite of your, even though Luke's going to have some of that croissant, so that you're having breakfast and it's officially the product.
Oh, yeah.
Love,
you know what I mean? What's going to happen, though, with a croissant, if I have a bite of a croissant during the taping here? All the little flaky particles. Yeah. I'll never be able to speak.
They'll go all over my bed as well.
Become a monologue quickly. Yeah, it'll be all over your bed, and there'll be no.
It's not creepy at all. It's not creepy at all. You know, I might be doing a podcast recording later with someone who I don't really know that well.
Oh,
yeah. Also here in my room.
Oh, in your room. We're in Jonathan's room. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's okay because we know each other quite well. But this would be.
It's intimate.
It is very intimate. It's very intimate.
Yeah. I think it's not intimate enough, though.
Yeah. It sounds creepier than it is. I think it smells quite nice in Jonathan's room. Like, it's pretty tidy. I'm looking around. You've got two pairs of slippers in plastic wrap, though. How did that make the cut for the trip?
Those are gifts for Kevin and his wife.
Ah, okay.
I think they've never been exposed to AJ and Smart slippers.
Okay. You think that could be a game changer?
As soon as he sees them, he's like, my mouth is full of food right now, by the way. That's why I'm like,
okay. We said the last episode we were always going to tell people what the Product Breakfast Club is about.
Oh, yeah.
When we start. So it's
you did a good job last time.
Did we? Okay. I can't remember what we said. It's a podcast about design. It's about products. It's about business strategy. It's about books. It's about movies. It's about breakfast. It's what else is it?
I just
about?
Realized I'm going to give you this half of the bagel and the cream cheese, and then you can continue.
And then you want me to eat it?
Yeah, you should eat it. I mean, it's good. I'm going to give this to you.
You did? Okay. All right.
Here we go. I'm going to pass this over. While you butter that up, I can give people a bit of context about what's been going on this week. Oh, God, is it going to fall?
Okay. John's passing it to me using the paper bag as a plate.
They didn't toast the bagel, but they told me, like, they're not going to toast it, so it's not.
They told you at least in advance.
They told me.
Yeah.
So it's the last day of work here in New York. It's been like I would say very nice, but super intense week. Nonstop work. Not a lot of time for like sightseeing or anything like that. Lots and lots of different people being met every day. I guess we've worked with like probably like 85 people this week already, if you think about how many people were in the first 2 days. And so how the week was structured is the first 2 days, we were with a company training them. Or it wasn't really training. It was like a mixture of a hackathon and a training event. So they were actually producing prototypes, which was really, really cool to see the end result. And that was a little bit of an experiment as well. Jake decided to see if we could squeeze the production of prototypes into the day, which was cool. I mean, there was like 75 people in the room approximately, even though it didn't feel that many.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
And we had how many prototypes at the end? Like 10 prototypes or something?
Yeah, I think so, because not everybody shared. But I think
really good,
17, 6 or 7 teams shared.
Some pretty really nice stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we moved to another company, not actually that far from that company physically, and now we're running actual design sprints. Myself and Jake are separate in separate rooms running separate design sprints on separate topics. And it's been such a pleasure. I don't know. I mean, your team and my team are both very into it and very excited about it. But also, I feel like everyone is so polite and nice here.
It's really funny because the reputation of New York is for the opposite of niceness, for rudeness. But which is the opposite of the niceness. Everybody's so nice. I think everybody is actually so nice. Somebody was saying the other day that it's because nobody's from here who lives here. Mm. I don't know. You live in Europe. I've spent a lot of time in Europe. And Europeans, I think, are very nice too. But Americans will more quickly get into nice mode. They're not going to wait a couple years like they might in Germany before they really get to know you. They'll start being nice right off the bat, which I think is, makes for a good sprint week.
And what I noticed here as well, and sorry to everyone who's listening to this and listening to two people speaking with their mouths full.
It's great because in the beginning of the podcast, we used to have like just poor quality microphones, poor quality audio, no Jason, really nothing good going on. Now we have like an excellent editor. We've got these nice microphones here, but we're chewing food and with construction sounds.
Yeah,
so it's like high quality, bad quality.
Yeah, it's good. I was going to say, one thing I love about working in the US is that the clients are so like almost religiously devoted to the brands that they're working at. They love the company.
Interesting.
I noticed that like in Europe, a lot of people are quite cynical about where they work. And I guess they always see it as like a transition. Maybe it's just because the brands we're working with are really cool all the time over here. But a lot of people are very devoted to the companies that they're working at. Actually, to be honest, even in the non-cool brands, like one of the things that we worked on last week, not you and I, but AJ and Smart, it was a not very amazingly cool brand, but everyone working there loves working there. And it just gets me excited too to work for them. Like they will wear the t-shirt of the company while you're in there with them and not feel weird about it.
Why would that be weird?
To the point where I'm actually asking them, can I have one of the t-shirts? And I'm like, you know, asking them, do they have a laptop sticker? I never do that. I'm like getting into it. I'm like, I want to work here too. It's cool. And it's also not like, it's not about having a cool work environment. A lot of these work environments that we're in, like, are often not like super cool. Like they're quite corporate, but somehow there's this connection to the brand that makes everyone really, really like, I don't know. There's like this enthusiasm in the air that things can get done. This is not interesting for people, probably. Let's keep going with it.
Just keep driving it.
Imagine this was a conference. Like, that's the cool thing about the Product Breakfast Club or having a podcast that people listen to. It's a lot more people than would ever come to a conference to listen to you. But it's so little content. I honestly think it seems like little content, but if you go to most conferences,
it's about the same.
It's probably the same, yeah.
Yeah. I realized just now I was just amplifying myself chewing. I didn't even have anything to say just then.
That's good. Yeah. You just held the mic up to... I was waiting for you to say something, but it's just... It's just disgusting.
Oh, man. Okay, so...
I'm liking this episode so far, though.
So, yeah, this is a good one. This is a strong one. Okay, we should maybe attempt to have some kind of a topic.
I don't have a topic, but I have a thought in mind that I think is going to be something potentially interesting for... the design industry in the future.
The future.
So I spoke about this on the podcast a few times, but actually not enough. I think that there's almost like a cornerstone skill that a lot of designers don't have that would help them to become much, much better designers and have much, much easier lives when they walk into a client's office or when they're walking around with a client, talking to them for the first time or doing a kickoff workshop or trying to like just get a new client. And that is understanding growth as a topic. For some reason, it's just not part of like learning design at all.
Yeah. Like
every single designer on the planet needs to understand growth. And I was just thinking about it on Wednesday when I was meeting the guy who was in charge of the project we're working on this week. He started talking to me as a designer and started like, you know, explaining interface things. And then as soon as I was able to say, you have a retention problem. He was like, okay, I can talk to you on that level, right? And it completely changed the conversation.
Right.
People expect designers, and you and I obviously kind of understand this, people expect designers to only be able to understand their corner of what they're doing.
Right.
But the designers who... like the guy we met last night, I don't know if you want to name drop, designers like that are, you know, make their way to the top of the pile because they understand the big picture of products, right? They really, really understand what does growth mean? What does it mean to like run a tech team? What are all the like intricate parts of building a product? And I think that a lot of designers focus so much on being like the best UX designer or the best UI designer or like this dogma of the user, right? It's like, as long as you nail like understanding the user, you don't need to learn anything else. And I think it's like a dangerous path that a lot of designers take where they'll end up being kind of put in the corner to do their work, but not being part of the product decisions like we are able to be. I've just been thinking about that.
It's funny. I was just, as you said that, I was kind of reflecting on what that meant. Like, how do you get there? And because one of the simplest ways to learn things is to read books. I mean, this is a very nice thing that's kind of accessible to almost everyone.
But no one reads books, by the way. Like, it's true. Like, a lot of people don't read
them. I probably mentioned this before on the podcast, but this friend of mine, Stefan, says books are cheap, which is, I think, is a really like nice, simple saying. Like, books are cheap because he's like, you get one idea out of a book, like they cost, you know, $17 or something. It's a bargain for your work to read a book.
Absolutely.
I know you have a list of books. You're reading about this topic all the time. I was trying to think back when I was, earlier in my career, I wonder what books I should have been reading. But I do know that one book I read, and this is kind of an old classic now, but was Crossing the Chasm. Have you read that?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Okay, so this used to be like a really...
I like the word chasm, though.
It's about how to have a new product that gets adoption in like a large market.
Oh, okay.
And I do think that reading that, just starting my career at Microsoft, just made me start thinking about the business of the product, which up until that point I had never thought of. And I had a manager who recommended that I read it, and so I did. And she was totally right. It changed my perspective. And I'm probably guilty of this whenever somebody asks what design books should I read, to not list business books.
Right. Yeah. I actually don't know a design book besides Sprint that I've even read.
By Sprint.
Yeah, by Sprint. And I don't even know if I would call that a design book, really. It's a almost like product process or problem solving book.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a, sort of a historical fiction. Or
it's
a
historical
romance.
Fiction. Yeah. Yeah. Sprint is
a ghost historical. It's a horror story.
Obviously, experience is probably what made you the designer you are, but what, like, books and resources along the way really helped?
Yeah, for me, it was...
Just burping right there.
Yeah, so the books that probably made the biggest impact for me would be Getting Real by 37 Signals, which means by Jason Fried and DHH, and that was a book that came out in 2006. Free book, they self-published it. Rework is like a revised and expanded version.
Yeah,
I think,
just a refinement of it, really.
Of Getting Real. But I actually personally kind of prefer Getting Real. Maybe it's because I read it, and I have such fond memories of it. But it's a little bit dated now. It's about building web apps in 2006. But it's just, that's so great. It's so great.
It's unbelievably
so
amazing.
So amazing. Yeah, that was an amazing one. The Art of Innovation was one that was really like...
I haven't read
that's
that.
That's just kind of like... From IDEO, kind of like how they worked. And that was a revelation to me to read about design thinking. There's this book, Made to Stick, that I always recommend. And I just probably talked about it on the show before. I think it's really great. It's about telling stories that are memorable to people. And it is not really about design, but it is very much also about design, because the way we tell the story of our product, we explain things, right, so important. And it's a very enjoyable read. It's a fun book.
Is this the Nir Eyal book?
No, Made to Stick is by Chip and Dan Heath.
Oh, right.
It's very much like the gold standard for when we were working on Sprint. Like, I really wanted it to be like Made to Stick because it was a useful book. It was kind of fun to read. There's Don't Make Me Think. It's classic.
Yeah. Steve Krug.
Design book. Yeah.
The Kruginator.
But see, in that list, I think actually Getting Real, and I think probably True of Rework too, has a bit about business.
Right.
But I think you look at that list and it is not a business heavy list. No. I wouldn't normally think to mention Crossing the Chasm, and I haven't looked at that book in years and years and years, so I can't even remember I know it like made me start thinking about business, but I don't know how many of those ideas like really stuck in my head.
Have you read The Personal MBA?
No.
This is a really, really good one for any designer, any person who just wants like a crash course in business. Like, it's written by a guy, like on the front of the book, it's like, this is better than going to business school, or you get basically everything. And it just teaches you all the fundamentals of business studies. Really helpful. I always say that sometimes, even if you don't like nail the topic, even if you don't go deep enough, like, or even if you feel like you still don't understand it, having the vocabulary, being able to say the words that your client says, the words that the business owner says, like when a business owner comes up to you and says like, yeah, we really need to hit these KPIs. And if you just stand there looking dumb, they're not going to put as much trust in you, right?
Even just to know that those words shouldn't intimidate you.
Yeah,
you know,
they should.
Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, although here's a tip.
Jake is standing right now, by the way. And I'm sitting. It makes
this
it really
awkward. It's really dramatic. Yeah. It feels like this tip is going to be really dramatic. This is a tip that I have learned from doing a lot of consulting work, or like, working at Google Ventures, working with a lot of different startups. when somebody says something and you don't know what it means, an abbreviation, just ask them what it means. It's totally fine to ask somebody what it means. There is some chance that you'll be embarrassed, but it is much lower than you think. Like, usually people are very happy to say what they mean. Like, if somebody says KPIs, you say,
or CTA.
Can you just tell me, when you say KPI, like, tell me what you mean.
But I feel like, let's say with CTA, is that like common terminology in the US as well?
Yeah, I know what you mean, call to action.
Yeah,
right? But like, I also know that people have different jargon in different companies.
Right.
And sometimes I think the jargon is like a little problematic. Like the fact that we so often talk in jargon, it means we're getting away from the heart of things. We're sometimes like using that to shroud and to kind of create like a smokescreen of to sort of defend our ideas or as arguments for our ideas.
One of the reasons that I was able to quickly get out of the primordial goo of designers, like, and kind of make my way up the, I don't know why I used that analogy, but one of the reasons I was able to kind of get out of being just like a normal designer was very quickly learning to speak in the language of the product managers and business owners of the companies I was working at in a way that made them feel like I was a partner to them rather than a resource to them. And sometimes this meant literally understanding these shitty terminologies. Like, I remember the first time when someone asked me about a CTA and I didn't know what it was. Obviously, that's fine. But immediately, of course, that person was like, this person won't understand conversion rate optimization. This person won't understand how to build conversion.
No, I mean, I think your point is a good one. Like, these are specific things you can learn. Okay, so personal MBA, what are some of the others?
I think I'll just really, really quickly list off like the ones that helped me to become like not just a designer, but whatever, getting this kind of strategic or other kind of perspectives. Rework, for me, was the first book. And this was, for me, I kind of always recommended as one of the best books for understanding like a no bullshit approach to product development. Really, really great. It doesn't use a lot of buzzwords or anything, but it gives you the confidence to be able to say things in meetings that someone else is saying, okay, we need to do this with the product. You can say, oh, maybe we should just do this, this, and this. And you can kind of like, Jason Fried's backing me up. Okay?
Yeah. No, totally. You know, there is a total that element of like, I sometimes feel like Jason Fried, like the ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi, is like whispering in my ear, you know? Like, it's a big deal because he's like, I know he's a big success and he's so confident and so like brash about his opinion. Like, knowing that there's someone who doesn't agree with the way everything else is done, who's like rooting for you, maybe.
Yeah.
Who, like, would totally have your back if he was in the room.
He's got my back.
It's a good feeling. Yeah. So read that book and it's like you got the ghost of Obi-Wan Kenobi on your side, 100%. Only he's still alive.
He's still alive. I think for me, hacking growth has been in recent years, in terms of the terminology people use today, and like the majority.
I'm gonna have to read that one. I have not read that
one.
It's
so good, Jake. It's unbelievable. I really, really think that it's like the sprint book for what comes after the sprint when you get into the nitty gritty details.
Yeah,
when you're kind of like sprinting on how to change the position of a button or something.
Right.
So sprint is like for the big ideas. Hacking growth is for the tiny, tiny experiments, and it's really, really amazing.
I'm going to have to get it on the Kindle because it's such a cheesy sounding title that if my wife sees me reading that, I think possibly
it is a cheesy, extremely embarrassing. It is a cheesy title, but I think as a product designer, you don't need to read it. You know the stuff already. You've got that, right?
You're flattering me.
I think you might have heard some of these conversations happening when you worked at GV or Google. There's a potential that you understand it. What you might find interesting in that book is how to integrate these experiments into a product development cycle in a way that I didn't actually realize. Like, in a way that I was like, okay,
I bet I don't know it. I think you could fill a pretty big swimming pool with stuff that I don't know.
Does it have to be a swimming pool?
Pretty big ocean. Actually, speaking of ocean, you've been reading this other book.
Blue Ocean Strategy. So my current path is to make my, and this is just to be as selfish as possible, I think that if I get good at strategy, I will get paid more as a designer. That's just like my hypothesis is that my kind of job is right now, what I get really paid for is kind of like a product strategist. But I think that I'm lacking the deeper understanding of real strategy. Like, what is strategy? Like, if someone was to say, hey, can you like help us with our strategy here? I wouldn't be able to run something like a sprint for strategy.
Yeah.
And Blue Ocean Strategy is a little bit like sprint for strategy. It shows you how to make strategy canvases. It shows you how to like actually create exercises that can help companies figure out strategic decisions and strategic questions. And I think it's really, really full of amazing case studies. So that book, like Blue Ocean Strategy, is a very, I would say surface level look at strategy.
Okay. So whereas hacking growth, you're saying it's more tactically like also here's how
hacking
to do
growth
it.
Is not related to strategy. It's like, so every single product that's being created on the planet right now, no matter what way you look at it, the product owners and the business people are looking at growth metrics of either acquisition, engagement, re-engagement, or retention. These are like the four things that every single project you and I have worked on probably for the last 3 years, those metrics are things that they're looking at when they want to validate a product, right? So like Facebook is the daily active users thing. So it's trying to get you to be engaged and also trying to retain them.
Oh, it's not going so good for them right now.
Not going so good. Oh my God.
Yesterday, in our time, you're listening to this in the future, but in our time, yesterday was the day Facebook lost $100 billion.
Yeah, they'll be fine. I think.
I don't know. What if by the time people listen to this, what if they lose $100 billion a day?
You know what? I was looking at that yesterday, and I'm not a person who's like, oh, fuck Facebook, blah blah blah. Yeah. I actually think that, like you, these tech companies, even if they do bad things, when you actually meet these people, you realize they don't realize they're doing bad things. They actually think they're doing good things. You know?
Yeah, that's
a lot of the
I think
time.
I think they are, for the most part, trying to do
right.
something.
That's what I mean.
Something good.
So the thing about Facebook that I'm happy that they lost a bit of money is that I'm like, huh, that's good.
Yeah.
Every time.
It is good, actually. Yeah.
No, wait, listen.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm going to just steal your argument before you say something. Like, yeah, good, gotcha.
It's good because every time people underestimate Facebook, the ad spend goes down because people are like, oh, Facebook's dead. No point in doing Facebook ads anymore. And then I come in and I have cheaper ads on Facebook and they work just as good.
Facebook,
it's
Facebook.
Just about
I thought
the
you were
ads.
Gonna come in with your own
Facebook.
Your own Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook too.
Hey guys, come on over to Facebook too. Yeah. Facebook too's got all your privacy needs sorted out.
I love that every year there's a new like privacy version of Facebook
and
no
source,
one goes over there.
Open source one.
What was the one recently? It was like super cool and hipster. Do you remember that one? It was
I
super
wasn't
hipster
even
one.
Probably invited to it.
Oh, you weren't even invited. I was there with my vinyls. hey, posting a vinyl on my wall. But whatever, I can't remember what I was talking about. But hacking growth, personal MBA, blue ocean strategy, rework, creative confidence was a good one. I really liked creative confidence.
Yeah.
Did you read that one?
Yeah.
I read it before Sprint, so
I'm just,
I was a bit
what's
more
interesting
blown
to
away.
Me is that you we were talking about business books. You included it in the same breath with those other
I
business
think
books,
it was,
which is cool. I mean, that's cool. That's a.
I feel like the reason why I like it so much is it gave me the creative confidence. I think it just has really nice case studies in there, which I was able to use for clients whenever they had questions about user-centered design. I kind of don't reference it anymore, but I felt like when I read it, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. So the idea with the book is like a person is going to take their experience. Like this is like a business book, right? Like a nonfiction book. Person is going to take their experience and try to put it into a piece of paper, a bunch of paper, a little
just a
stack
piece
of paper.
Paper.
Yeah. Put it into a document so that hopefully somebody else who reads it can just get a head start on everything. Like that was my thinking with Sprint. Like I'm going to put in all the stuff that I know that we know, like we're going to put all this stuff into this document. And then if you want a little like to not have to slog through years to get there like we did, then like you read this. And like I was probably only able to do that because I had read all these other books. I had read these books by the Kelly brothers and by Chip and Dan Heath and by Tim Brown and like all these people. Like they had given me a boost from their experience, you know, and they previously got boosts from other experiences. These documents are like ways to sort of warp ahead in your experience.
That's a really cool way to think about
and
it.
And like how much do you think you spend on nonfiction, like business books a year?
Like let's say maximum 30 euro per month, which I can't do the math on.
Okay, but that's pretty aggressive. That means you're buying, what, like 2 books a month maybe?
I buy about
two to three
per month,
nonfiction books
a
month.
Which
is
higher than the average.
It's a lot, right? I couldn't even read that
I don't
many
read
per
that
month.
Many.
I used to, but I don't buy that many anymore. But I buy more than I read for sure because sometimes you really don't know until you start reading it. Sometimes I just like skim it or whatever.
I read one per month.
What do you think the return on investment is? Just like roughly like...
Holy crap. If I think about Sprint, right? Sprint cost me about $18 and it's been responsible for about 10 million in revenue.
Wow. God, I should get some of that. That's so it's, man, that hasn't been responsible that much for me.
No, but I mean, I'm not getting that 10 million. Yeah. I spent it all. Don't worry. But I think like for me, books have the highest return of investment of anything I've ever done, like of anything that exists. That's why I'm always shocked when people don't read.
People don't, but they don't. If you're still listening to this episode, even through all the construction noise and everything, just buy books and read them. That is a thing that most people aren't doing. It's an unfair advantage. It's shocking on your colleagues.
To me. It's actually shocking to me. I know my employees listen to this as well, and they hear me ranting about this all the time. And I'm fine if my employees don't read, but for their own future careers outside of AJ and Smart as well.
Yeah.
It's one thing for me to be like, you should read, you should read, you should read. But just for your career and your life, there's almost no better way to get an advantage over everyone else. I posted this on Instagram recently. I realized that a lot of the kind of talk around reading is CEOs read one book a week, blah, blah, blah. You need to read one book every 2 months and you'll be ahead of everyone else on the planet.
You don't have to go nuts. And you should buy or look at more books than you actually read. And you should look at books that are in other industry, other expertises. So if you're a designer, don't just read design books. Look at business books. If you're in business, look at some design books. Like, these are ways to get way ahead of everybody. Once you start to know a little bit about what different approaches to solving problems, you get so far ahead. I think we should wrap it up because we got to walk. We got to actually go to our work.
We're walking, are we?
Today. Okay. We should probably go by a bookstore on the way and just pick something up.
Last thing. Do you know I started a book club so that I can read more?
No. Who's in the book club?
It's like 100 people from my Instagram.
Okay.
I want to force myself to finish them and have to teach them.
Yeah.
So for example, this Sunday, I'm doing like a 1 hour long live stream where I'm teaching everything I learned in Blue Ocean Strategy to 100 people who I led into the book club.
Wow.
I'm so committed to reading.
You're creating fake work for yourself.
Exactly.
But that's actually probably, I mean, I'm joking, but that's actually a really good thing
to do. No, I know
it's
really ridiculous, but especially with the way, with all the travel and everything, but I was just like, I believe that every time I read a book, it dramatically changes my entire career. So even Gandalf 2.
Even Gandalf 2. Wait till you read Gandalf 2.
All right, then. Everybody. Jake, where can people find you online?
They can find me online at Twitter, at JK, and you can find me at jakeknapp.com. Where can people find you?
You can find me on... Sorry, I got excited there. You can find me on Instagram at JIceCream. Product Breakfast Club. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye from New York.
New York City.
New York, it's a Product Breakfast Club kind of town.
New York City. Give me a bagel.